Transportation Committee to order. February 5th. Time is 1:33 for the record. For the record, the Senator Ferencamp, Senator Coghill, Senator Jones are in attendance. Senator Kelly. And Senator Kelly. Today we'll hear Senate Concurrent Resolution 3 relating to design and construction of the highway from Aflutna to intersection of Parks and Glen Highways. After the hearing, we will continue the overview of the Department of Transportation. And the topic we'll focus on will be aviation and highways this afternoon. I will open the public hearing on Senate Concurrent Resolution 3 at this time. And the sponsor testimony will be heard now.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Beth Curtula, and I'm an aide to Senator Curtula. Senate Concurrent Resolution 3 is simply a reaffirmation of the commitment on the part of the legislature to urge the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities to go ahead with the building of the four-lane highway between Aflutna and the Park and Glen Highways. The $8 million, as noted in the fiscal note, is already there. The Department of Transportation is really underway, and this is just to urge them to continue that and to continue Senator Curtula's intent that that road be built as soon as possible. It really is one of the most dangerous stretches of highway in the state. Anyone who's traveled it has seen innumerable accidents and come close themselves. So this is simply a resolution to reaffirm the commitment that it be built for the safety of the people in that area. And that is all my testimony. I'm happy to try and answer any questions.
All right. Thank you. Anybody in the committee?
Chairman, I have a couple questions to DOT.
Thank you.
No questions?
We should have someone from DOT here. I had requested that, but thanks. Thank you.
Any further testimony?
Yes, go on. My name is Ron Lind. I'm the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities. I guess I'd like to spend just a couple of minutes on the fiscal note. When a similar resolution was up in the House, there were some questions concerning that. Fiscal note talks about an ultimate project of about $142 million. That number is not within the next six-year time frame. That includes estimates for full interchanges at the Glen and the Parks Highway intersections there. What's anticipated to put this to a four-lane is approximately a $60 million project. On the fiscal note there, it shows that about $8 million in federal money has been appropriated. The assumptions in the department are that in fiscal 90, and there would be a need for an additional $35 million of federal appropriation, and in 91, an additional $17 million of federal highway fund appropriation. The traffic count on this road in 1985 was about 15,000 average daily traffic, and that doesn't, and that is average. That doesn't take into account such things as peaks during the state fair or any other event like that, or the summer variations.
Mr. Chairman, I am very much in support of the concurrent resolution, because if you look at the map, it's where your four lanes come off your heavy traffic out of Eagle River and out of Anchorage, and this would get the traffic relief as far as what's coming in from the Richardson side on the Glen Highway and what's coming in from Wasilla on the Parks Highway. So you have the, I guess our biggest concern is that this is money that we're asking to be put into the loop from the 1987, 88, 89 trust fund money that we'll be receiving.
Yes.
And this doesn't, Ron, this does not have anything to do with the dollar that's there now. That's, there's some controversy whether it's going to go to the 30th Avenue bypass, South Bypass, or it's going to go to a particular project in the South.
No, the expenditure of these funds isn't close enough in the time period that they would be involved in this. What we hope was just the next month or so until Congress passes another federal highway bill.
This doesn't affect that.
Senator Duncan.
I notice in the funding from the general fund for the 89, 421.6, and then when we get into 90, it reaches the 1,848,000 in the general fund. That's been in the five-year plan, has it?
Senator, well, yeah, this is the match money related to those highway dollars, and all of our assumption has been that the match money will be made available equal to the total amount of federal money that's available for the highway construction as well as the aviation construction program.
Which has always been the
That's the always historically been the case, yes.
Then if we are asked by our constituents, if we, for instance, were to put a due pass or a yes and so forth, hey, wait a minute, what are you doing? We're still in a fight over those funds that are already issued and not being spent in some areas. This, we can truthfully say, this does not in any way affect it.
This does not affect the South Fairbanks Expressway project, if that's the one you're mentioning. I'm sure that...
Well, I don't care if it's South Expressway or Richardson Highway or the Geist Extension or what it is.
But it doesn't affect any of the funds.
Senator, it doesn't directly... When this project begins to get ready to go to actual construction, I'm sure that there will be other projects that are also close to ready to construction. And this is the first year we've historically had a problem in not having enough federal apportionment available to go with each project as it was ready. So conceivably, you could have a problem in the future.
If I'm interpreting you correctly, this could indeed be in competition, if I might use that word, with those bid-ready projects in other areas of the state.
In 1991.
That's true, then. Thank you.
But that's 5 years off, right?
I beg your pardon.
But that's a number of years off.
But it's a bid, if it's bid-ready now, what he's talking about, it would come. If it can get funded by 1991, it's not a competition.
Except those others that have been ready in 1991.
Well, all the projects would be.
Then aren't we all in that?
They all are.
That's my point. Okay. Yeah.
But it's not competing with projects that we're talking about on the back burner.
No, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
What we're doing with this concurrent resolution is that we're directing the DOTPF to put this into the five-year plan and to bring it up, as it says here, to proceed as soon as possible with the design and construction. So what they're doing is that we're asking this to be put up on the front burner in the five-year plan. This might take some precedence over upgrade of the Alaska Highway or something, but I think that it all has to go to how much design. I don't know whether they've got their right-of-way, that's going through the hay flats. And that's a delicate environment there, and we might have to see if there's any snail garters there.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Booth.
I presume that within the design criteria for this highway we're talking about here, that you have the moose barriers problem solved, too. Or are we going to go ahead with this and then turn around and you have... someone saying, well, gee, we got to put moose berries up there now, you're to the tune of another $10 million. If I remember, that was the cost of doing that. You catch that out of the Mat Valley, I'm pretty sure.
Chairman, I don't know the status of the question on moose crossings at this road.
We do have a problem with that, you're well aware of.
Yes, and I know that in the current, at least in the project that's underway in the current area, they've got an experimental attempt to see what paths the moose really will take and whether it's going to be necessary to put fencing in.
Thank you. In other words, we haven't made that consideration out of it all. Appreciate it.
it's not been decided as to what the solution is going to be. I mean, that's part of the current process that's underway.
Thank you.
For the record, Senator Boot has arrived. Any further questions?
All right, thank you, Ron.
Thank you.
Chairman?
Senator
Coggins? I move and ask unanimous consent that the Senate concurrent resolution number 3 pass from the Committee of Individual Recommendation.
Hearing no objections, so ordered. All right. All right, with that business taken care of, we'll get on with more view from the department. And which one wants to lead off here?
Mr. Chairman, Ron Lynn's going to walk us through the aviation presentation. And if I have anything to add, I'll certainly shine it to you.
Mr. Chairman, before we get into the formal discussion, could I ask Mark, have we heard anything new from Washington as to the formula?
Well, Mr. Chairman,
the Highway Trust Fund.
Get my days mixed up because they're starting to run together. As of yesterday, the Senate passed their version of the bill. The report I have. The statute that passed does not have any formula changes at the Senate, of course the House does. The Senate version does have the provision providing for rural interstate speed limits going up to 65 miles an hour, which is not in the House, but it's going to be one of the controversies in the conference committee. There's also close to $1 billion worth of demonstration projects. At least there was in the last version of the House bill. I assume it's about the same.
What are those demonstration projects? What is
that?
Well,
they're individual projects in states, predominantly in the East rather than the West, that are over and above the apportionments normally made available. So that if Alaska had one, we would get our apportionment, and then there'd be a demonstration project for the project you were just on. And it'd be money available for that over and above what you normally obtain.
Yeah, Mark, are those the bridge upgrades and the is that their $1 billion or is that another million?
Mr. Chairman, Senator, it runs the gamut. There's a large project in Boston, for example, that deals with the final completion of an interstate that's been very controversial for years. And I from the list I looked at back in the fall, it across the board in terms of what kind of projects they are in the highway area, again, predominantly for eastern states rather than western. So that's a point of contention. There's also a larger amount of transit money in, I guess actually now in the Senate version, that the President has said is unacceptable if it comes to him. So where we're at is House has passed a bill, Senate has passed a bill, the state of Alaska would be much more comfortable with the Senate bill, pretty much status quo. There's going to have to be a conference. There's a potential threat of a veto depending on how they work out certain issues. There's no schedule as of yesterday for a conference. And that's basically what we know. Maybe Ron has something new. And it did. I heard this morning on the radio that it passed the Senate last night. That's where I get that. It was still on the floor of the Senate as of yesterday. And our people were watching back there, John Katz's office, and well, to the things that are of concern to us, and they've been working very closely with Senator Stevens and Murkowski to keep an eye on anything that might come up on the floor of concern. That didn't happen last time, and everything we know, it didn't happen this time either in the Senate.
Okay. So it's the House version we got to be wary of.
The House version would have the state's apportionment at about $123 million a year compared to in excess of 150 million. You've seen the figure of 170. My sense is that's a little high.
154 is our estimate. Yeah.
154
is our estimate.
That's the House version?
Senate version.
Which is 123.
123 is the House.
Additionally, what we've been getting, the formulas can stay the same. The program levels are what do change overall, and depending on how they're viewing the budget situation of Grand Rutland, that dollar figure has varied slightly from 154 million. That's traditionally what we've been getting for the last 4 years.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Very informative.
See, we're going to talk about airports here for a little bit.
Yes, sir. Mr. Chairman. Okay.
What I thought I'd do today is, instead of trying to explain the state airport system in particulars and to explain all the classifications, I thought I'd try and make it more, what types of information are available and what uses are we making of them. Last year, in the spring of the year, state actually adopted an aviation system plan. And basically what this plan is pretty much a required document from the Federal Aviation Program, but it's also a working document that we're using. And what we're passing out here is a summary of it in your green document. And then an inventory, which basically takes every airport in the state and tells you what the classification of it is and what the current status there is. So in this, the green document, which is also, there were some just plain copies like this, so the green document is the same as this one. It basically went through, and this is a summary, saying that we categorize the airports in the state. And the reason we tried to categorize those was to be able to then identify and establish a minimum criteria for apron space, taxiways, runway length and width. And just here it shows the general categories we had. We had international airports, of course, we're all familiar with Anchorage and Fairbanks being typed there. Regional center airports or airport that then you have distribution from those airports to others in a location. Juneau, Bethel, district airports, example for the Antioch, Sitka, and then on down to your transport airports and finally down to your lowest level of community airports. Now, Alaska is a very aviation-dependent state, as we all know. The functional class by region, and as I said, in this document here is an actual list alphabetical of every airport in each region and the classification, but I don't think there's a need to go into that. Central region having 138, northern region 110, and southeast region 46. We have some maps also that show what we call a region within DOT, and we'll hand those out. Probably should have done that first. Now, the international airports are funded out of a special fund, and the operating expenses there in Anchorage, it was about $20 million is the estimate for 1988 operating budget. Fairbanks, approximately $8 million. So on those two airports, we spend about $28 million in operations and maintenance. The remainder of the airports in the state that we maintain, we spend maybe $12 million on. So you can see that the general, of our total aviation activity, the bulk of it is in Anchorage and Fairbanks. The next category would be the regional center and district airports. And those, the types of airports that cause the state of Alaska to have expenses are those, largest expense are those that have certificated carriers operating. And the basic difference is there's requirements from FAA for special services. And the certificated carrier is purposes of this carrier with an aircraft seating capability of 30 seats that's flying scheduled flights. Now, there are also communities that operate their airports, not a great deal. Southeast, there's Juneau, Sitka, and Ketchikan that operate airports of a significant size that are commercial.
Anchorage, of course, operates Merrill Field, and Fairbanks has operations at General Aviation Field. But other than that, basically the state of Alaska is the operator of the entire airport system. So I think that knowing these categories that exist...
Chairman McGill, Ron.
Certainly.
You're leaving out a very special component, and that's your city airports. You said that other than the international airports, why the state of Alaska operates, they don't operate Juneau.
No.
Well, is that community?
They don't operate...
They don't operate Juneau, Sitka, Ketchikan, and Nenana.
Kenai.
So
yep. There's some major airports that are community operated.
Yeah.
And
Merrill Field.
Function, yeah. Well, he said Merrill Field, but he didn't.
Said Ketchikan.
Ketchikan? Mm-hmm. Ketchikan
State
Airport.
Ketchikan, Sitka, and not operated. Isn't that...
The city of Ketchikan operates Ketchikan Airport. City and borough, I don't know which borough.
How much is the cost to the state for that one?
Operational, we don't put in a subsidy or a direct subsidy into that airport.
Equipment or anything?
We do spend money on equipment sometimes there, also Sitka. Also, these community-operated airports receive a portion of the federal aviation construction funding. And basically what happens there is the state of Alaska signs off and agrees with the project, and then the money goes directly from the federal aviation to the community airport, community-operated airport.
And is a community-operated airport categorized differently than the totally-owned airport like the one here at Juneau?
They'd be classified in this system based on the function that they served. Whether they were what the system tries to classify as a regional...
What I'm trying to say is, Ron, there's a difference between the community... operated, quote-unquote,
and community.
Because you confused me.
Oh, excuse me.
There's no 46 communities in the northern region that operate their airport.
Right. About on page 3 of this green document, there's a chart much like this, and it lays out the definitions. And maybe I should have spent a
page
minute.
Page 3?
Approximately. Yeah, there you go. There's not page numbers. And international airports, just major international interstate access points to Alaska and to major urban centers. Then the next category, if you will, is a regional airport centers, center airports, primarily interstate access to a region of Alaska, district airports, transport, and then community. And community airport is a land or water access to a small rural community. So... of at least 25 permanent year-round residences, so it's true. Juneau,
just momentarily flipping back to this first one, Juneau is classified as a regional center category of airport, even though it's operated by the city and borough of Juneau. So the classification system is separate from whoever is responsible for the operation of the
Then, Mr. Chairman, your leave.
Yeah.
Someplace in here, we then go from classification to dollar responsibility of operation.
Yes. In this other document here, there's a listing that says basically it takes starting on page B15. Takes all the airports in the central region alphabetically, and it says the region and the owner and the classification and the existing length and surface. So all the airports in the state.
Where is your index on what all of those abbreviations are? What's it? Do we have an index?
Yes, it is right in here, identifying the various.
If I'm ahead of myself, your presentation, maybe I ought to back away from this.
I think it looks like one thing's going to lead to another here.
I know where I'm going.
All right.
It's on B2 is the...
B2? Okay, go ahead with your presentation, Mr. Chairman. I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's fine. Go ahead. I'm wondering.
Basically, the... As go on. The reason we had this major system classification is a way of identifying the types of capital improvements and the types of services that would be available at each one of these various locations. In other words, when you went through and you classified, you created the classes, or you basically got agreement on these classifications of airports, you also then identified a standard that should exist. Community airport ought to have X, a transport airport ought to have Y, such as that. And out of that, and there was two things that were done. A cost estimate was prepared, which identified the total deficiencies that existed in the system. So as part of that deficiency identification, it said, gee, right now, just to bring these airports up to minimum standards, there was about $175 million of improvement work that would be required. And that's just to bring them to the minimum. There are other cases that would cause you to want to have an airport above the minimum. Now, one common concern usually is when somebody generates a plan such as this, does it ever actually get utilized? Well, during our budget review and prioritization process, as well as FAA's process in reviewing our grant applications, they look at the category of the airport, the type of improvement that we're proposing, and if it is one to bring the airport up to the minimum standard, it gets a higher rating. If you're proposing to bring an airport above the minimum standard for that category of airports, you have to be able to specifically justify that to FAA if you're going to be utilizing federal airport improvement funds. And in our own system, there would have to be a very overriding reason to bring an airport above standard that would give it a priority before we've been able to bring the other airports up to the minimum standard. What these are trying to establish was the minimum standard for these various categories of airport. In this document, it also gives a very brief description of the operational areas, minimum standards. Basically, it has a runway length and a runway width. It talks about what type of taxiway would be available, apron size, such as that. Now, in our federal aviation funds, there's probably one other thing you should be aware of. The state of Alaska probably gets approximately $30 to $35 million in airport construction funding. Well, the Airport Improvement Act expires at the end of this federal fiscal year, in the federal fiscal 87. Last time it expired, there was about a one-year hiatus when there wasn't actually a bill in effect. Now, hopefully, we won't have a similar situation this year, but that is a possibility. And that funding bill, the current one, has various categories of funding, just as the federal highway does. It has funds that come to the state of Alaska for airports under a slightly different classification system than we use in our aviation system plan. And part of that is caused by the nationally they're trying to differentiate between airports that have major amounts of traffic. So they have a funding formula for those airports. Also in the federal legislation, there's specifically named Alaskan airports that were put into one class or another in the bill. Well, it was almost an artificial classification of airport that was created in the bill. And so that's another reason why it doesn't agree.
Mr. Chairman, was that a spinoff from the old primary system that they used when they transferred all of the airports over to the state?
Actually, I think it was a reaction to the bill that existed prior to this most recent one, and there was an attempt, I guess, to second guess what the outcome was going to be. These airports were categorized, that stayed in the bill, and there were slight changes in the other formulas. And while we maybe got more money, we got it identified to specific airports without much ability to transfer it around. And what we ended up with until FAA made some adjustments in the regulations was money for an airport. And right now it comes out that this certain class of airport gets a $170,000 a year or some number up to, they save up 3 years worth, and they get $475,000 is the maximum out of that category of money you can get for that particular airport. Well, you can't do an airport improvement, really, for $475,000, which means then you have to go over to a very limited, very tight amount of what they call discretionary money that's available to the state and fund the remainder of the project out of it. And just because of the particular rules they created by this special class, yes, each one of these airports gets guaranteed an amount of money. They get guaranteed that it doesn't go anyplace else, but it also happened to almost guarantee that you couldn't put together a reasonable project there. So there are a few changes we'd like to have made in that bill, but even so, Alaska does come out very well in terms of dollars of revenue in versus dollars of revenue back out of the aviation construction program. It's not as high a ratio as it is in the highway program.
That'll expire, Mr. Chairman. That'll expire in October?
Yes.
This year?
Yes.
So we got one allocation coming around.
Yes. There are a number of national groups that are looking at changes in that formula, changes in the process, and we've been trying to keep right abreast of that.
Are you going to, Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
Last year, we remember that we found ourselves in a position of building airports that nobody wanted because they fit into a category. Have we reviewed that, such as building the airport at Boundary? It's in my district, and I don't mind a little park, but then, you know, it's got to serve something, too, and that Boundary is a closed-down city because the mining has been closed down in that 40-mile area. Maybe Mark might be able to help in this, or do you know what, have we restructured those?
We still have that similar problem. That goes back to the categorization of funds that are in the bill. That particular airport, I'm sure, is in what's called basically area population funding. We get a considerable amount of area population funding, but because of this particular category of airports that they created for Alaska, we can't spend any of it on those, so we have a very limited number of airports we can spend it. Merrill Field is a general aviation airport, and some of those others. We had hoped to do a project out on the Pribilofs, St. George, St. Paul area. Came out that that's going to require an environmental impact statement, according to FAA, which means that we can't then put a large amount of those general aviation funds in there. But yes, we are looking at it closely. If the new bill comes in the same manner as the current one, we're going to continue to have problems with general aviation, general area population funding for construction.
Because, Mr. Chairman, I think we got them to back away from that particular airport. We let them go with the one at Healy because that had an emergency situation. And I don't know whether either of you gentlemen know whether those are coming back around to us or not, because I guess it's a perception out there, you know, we're short of money and everything else, and we're building airports out in the tule bushes for nobody, you know. And I told the constituency, we had a meeting up there, I told them that it was categorized type project, but still, that doesn't satisfy.
Yeah. I don't have my list of capital projects here with me to look at that particular one.
Well, the other added to that is that as you build these facilities, you bring on more M&O costs that we don't have money for also.
That's true. In a general aviation airport, the operational costs are not too large. Typically, they're going to be a ski operation in the winter, perhaps without snow removal. But what you do have to do when you sign up and spend federal aviation grant money is you're agreeing for 20-year maintenance on that facility.
Well, not only that classification of airport, but right on up the line.
Right. Area population is the one where we typically have a problem in identifying high priority uses of the money. In any of these that aren't meeting the minimum criterion that's been established, there's probably a good reason why you'd want to proceed with all of these projects. And the majority, very few of these dollars are in the area population type airports. They're at the larger or only access to community airports. In other words, you have small places that it might cost you $6 million to put in an airport for maybe 50 people, but it may be the only access that that community has to the connected rest, remainder of the state. Conceivably, yes, if you're out on the chain, you could go by vessel, but it's not a real access to the rest of the state, especially for any kind of emergency service.
So the increase, the $32 million, Mr. Chairman, the $32 million of runway deficiency in the central region compared to the $50 million in the larger northern region, which more aviation is in. Is that because of international airport?
Oh, excuse me, this is 82.
I'm 82 compared to the 50. That's what I'm saying. $32 million more.
I don't believe it's international airports. It's basically the...
if you don't know, that's all right. We'll look at it later.
You have
it's in the community
airport cuts.
Just your basic number.
Okay.
That Bethel area out in that neck of the woods?
Yeah. Yep.
All the way down the chain.
Oh, down the chain, too. Oh, okay. Okay.
What I wanted to do was just basically try and leave you with the impression that all these categories are existed and they're documented, so if your staff have questions, they can find those. There are also then what the use is made of those categories, and when a deficiency is identified, it is one of the factors that's used in our prioritization of capital projects internally, as well as with FAA for evaluation of proposals that we do send to them.
The way you could really proportion.
So that, I mean, quickly, what you see does occur is if you look at the mixture of deficiency identification by region, and this is down to the minimum standard. It's true. Now, you like I say, you may have areas that need, for one reason or another, to be above that. You quickly see that you would end up with probably proportionally less money in Southeast Alaska for airport construction than you would in the other regions. And one of the reasons probably is that Southeast Alaska has been able to proceed with their airport construction program rather well. There are basically every place in Southeast that has strongly desired a land-based airport has gotten one. There hasn't been the problems with land acquisition that have basically stymied at many of the airports in the other parts of the state. There was enough private ownership, there was enough other ownership of land in Southeast that airport expansions and airport construction could proceed. But just looking at the numbers, you quickly see that you couldn't have a what people would think maybe a proportional distribution if you're using this minimum criteria. I just wanted to spend a couple of minutes just quickly running through some of the gross statistics at the two international airports, just because they are so large. The AIA Anchorage International, which is our most used airport, also the revenue generator for basically the International Airport Revenue Fund, had about 4.6 million passengers in 86, I mean in 85, and about 4.5 million passengers in 86. So a slight decline, nothing major in that area. Fairbanks Stratton passenger count, while it's much smaller, actually did increase in 1986 from about 545,000 to 557,000. So it's a slight growth there, and both of those are in line with the estimated passenger volumes that people were using for their planning purposes. Freight, there was more of a decline in freight through Anchorage International than there was in the populate in the passenger area. Basically in 85, 317 million pounds.
and in 86, 285 million. So there was a fair decrease there. And that is a problem that people are trying to address, but there is a way to generate more freight traffic through either one of those airports. Fairbanks freight basically level again, slight decrease from 51 million to 50 million between the 2 years.
Mr. Chairman, to Ron there, is there any way that we can spin out freight trends in Fairbanks and Anchorage as far as what is pipeline or what is oil expiration related compared to what is general freight? Is there, do you have that, or would that be just too much of a?
They would be able to spin out information that is basically freight moving through the airport. If the airport was the destination and then it was moved by some other mode, they wouldn't know the ultimate use of
freight. You know what I'm trying to get at?
How much of that
is North Slope orientated compared to Antioch and Galena and places of in that area? And is that was first part of the question. The second part is, how much of that is fish-orientated, resource-orientated? And do you have that, or is there, you know, I imagine you're not asking a freight airplane where they're going and what they're hauling and stuff, and I don't particularly want you to do that or anything. It's just that I was wondering if there was for a resource committee, I know you folks just really put the thousands and thousands of pounds of fish through Anchorage, and I'm wondering if there's,
I don't know. I'd have to actually check and see if they have what they think would be an accurate. I mean, they could make an estimate based on who the carrier was, because some of those carriers that are hauling fish are just pretty well, that's their own business. But those carriers that are hauling year-round all types, I don't believe they could do that at all.
Well, in your big airport plan, you raised that question last year, as I recall, in your master plan for aviation, that red book. We talked about that.
This is what this is from.
Yes, the summary.
Mr. Chairman, the master plan for Fairbanks was just finished, and maybe as part of that effort, even though they don't do it on an annual basis, they have a sense of what the numbers have been running. We can check. What we'll do is check for you, Senator, with our Fairbanks planning people and get back to you.
Well, and then there was also that major review that was done trying to assess the economic impact of the Anchorage Airport on the Anchorage economy.
Yeah. All right. That's what I'm looking for. That's why I asked the question.
Okay, so that basically is a quick overview of our aviation system, trying to just give you an idea of how it's looked at from the state viewpoint, also the federal viewpoint, and some of the most gross statistics from the two largest airports.
Mm-hmm. Now, let me ask you a question, if that's the end of your presentation, Ron. How about, have you folks done any marketing? I think I asked you to do this last year, a marketing trend study between doing the international freight servicing at the Fairbanks International Airport instead of the Anchorage International Airport. Anybody doing anything on that?
I don't think anything's been done. They're in the process. Well, let me back up. Air cargo transshipment handling. Right now, there's a contract that's being in the process of being awarded. They went through an RFP procedure. Basically, Alaska Industrial Development Authority is funding it, looking at, are there cargo movements that are out there that could be available to Anchorage or Fairbanks? Can we identify an economic reason why we should be able to entice them to utilize Anchorage and Fairbanks? And then if the answers to that review are yes, it then the next phase of that, and it's all contained in the same contract, but it has decision points to proceed or not, would be, all right, what type of facilities are needed at the airports to do that, to get that added ingredient in there? Who should own them? Who should pay for building them? and who should operate them. So that process is probably partly as a result of your questions last year, but it is not complete. In fact, they're just signing the contracts.
Why did we use ADA, Mr. Chairman? Why did we use a banking facility open to the public sector? Why didn't we use International Airport Revolving Fund Program?
To do the review, I think because there wasn't actually any funds appropriated for it. Also, ADA would be the most, of the public sector financing available, they would be the most likely one to finance such an improvement if it was required that it had some sort of outside financing in it. They're looking at that project saying that there's a lot of other economic benefits to the whole economy of Alaska from being able to bring that movement in there.
You didn't answer my maybe it's not in your purview to answer the question. Maybe I shouldn't put you on the spot. Alaska Industrial Development Authority. Why did we not, you know, I was surprised that that this process got done about a month after we didn't know anything about it in the last session of the legislature. And then all of a sudden, why we hear all of this business going on in July about this ADA program, where they're going and doing the survey, all of the rest of it, to find facts for marketing facilities for the International Airport, which International Airport Fund is narrowly structured. We can't use it for anything else. There is a sufficient amount of funds in that structure, but we go over here and take money that could be used in another part of the society from ADA and do something in the public sector. Why didn't we use public funds? Why didn't we use international airport funds?
Well, I think there's probably two reasons. Number one, international airport revenue funds to be used have to be appropriated through the legislature.
Well, why didn't they ask us?
I can't answer that, but whatever the timing was, they weren't appropriated. ADA has also has done reviews of other things at the International Airport. In fact, they were seriously under consideration for financing of the parking structure there instead of going through the use of International Airport revenue bonds. They actually spent some time and effort looking at that as a potential investment for Industrial Development Authority bonds. The other reason, I think, to get them involved, as I stated before, instead of doing it strictly with international airport revenue money, is they would be a likely source of financing for that facility. Typically, the International Airport Revenue Fund would not finance construction of a cargo facility. It might do some apron work, make some land preparation, but it would not finance the construction of a cargo facility.
Well, how about private sector corporate bonds? What about, is there any shipper or carrier that's interested in space where they would go out and put out tax-exempt bonds, say?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's what I said. One of the factors of the study is to say, if there is an improvement, what is that improvement? Who should or could finance, and then who should operate it? Some of the major freight carrier firms like United Parcel and
right.
Those type of things.
DHL a factor in this?
They would be one of the markets they'd look at, yes. But some of those people, their preference is to fully own and finance the whole facility themselves. Others, you know, but to do the front-end study to try and go through these steps and identify the market, identify and keep on going down through these market potentials, I don't think you would find one of them to do it other than for their very narrow or fairly narrow portion of the market field.
But it's all free, however narrow and however large or whatever. I mean,
right, but they're serving very different markets. I mean, at Anchorage, one of the aspects they're trying to look at is the idea, of course, of having it be a transshipment for freight from Orient to Europe, offload a portion of that freight and onload some other type of U.S. Freight onto an aircraft going through there, seeing if you could use it as a point to drop some freight off of an airplane, say, going from Japan to Europe, and drop off a portion of freight that would be destined for the lower U.S.
That's where the
next bag.
That's where that free zone thing comes in that Senator Kelly's working on. I guess I can see part of the rationale, but doesn't satisfy me from the standpoint that I think that, see, the problem I've got with this is that we're really going around the ability of the legislature to be in the loop, to appropriate and to plan and to do the things that are coming down the line when the DOT goes out and borrows money from ADA to do something that should really come through the loop of the legislature to say, yes, we'll do this, or no, we won't do it.
Yeah. We did not borrow money from them. We have no obligation for payment and no expectation of repayment on their part. They're simply doing this review as a potential investment in the Alaskan economy.
I understand. But the Development Authority is doing it with revenue funds that's supposed to be used for either enhancing their pot or doing their administration. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
I mean, I'm not going to follow the issue any further than this, because when we get ADA before here, I'll ask them the situation on it. It's just that I'm disturbed about the power of the legislature being run around.
Are there freight facilities in Fairbanks that aren't being utilized?
Well, it's warehousing.
Warehousing. And then in Anchorage, where are we in Anchorage? Are we at a...
There is some warehouse space available there in Anchorage. You mean at the airports?
Yes.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, is the airspace is really the big thing. It's the time that it takes to get into the air zone to get down to land. This has a delay. And are you up on that, Ron? Or
no, I'm not.
That's okay. Operational. But as I understand it, there's about a 45-minute now air zone restriction. Thank you.
All right.
I enjoyed that.
Thanks, Ron. No other questions on the airport side. I'd like to just go through some brief items on the highway system. What I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes talking about the rough size of the Alaska highway system, if you will, and then spend some time on the, this is categorized by the federal categories, and then spend some time on this second issue, which is basically the current federal rules for apportionment of highways and use of funds. I certainly don't want to try and take your time and go through it in total. But basically, under the federal categorization for funding purposes, we have interstate, which Alaska has about approximately 1,100 miles designated interstate. And the difference is that it was built previously, an agreement was reached where it was put into the federal act that could be considered as an interstate highway. It didn't have to be brought up to the national interstate standards appropriate basically for the traffic is
is the kind of standard it's supposed to be brought up to. The reason that was quite an important factor to Alaska is nationwide interstate highway construction and interstate highway repair, if you will, are going to be, construction is disappearing, more and more of the funds are going to be switching over to repair of the interstate. And in fact, there are almost federal initiatives that would say that the federal government would like to concentrate on the interstate in the primary and say that the remainder of the highway systems in the various states are a state responsibility and a state need more than a national priority.
And which, just quickly, Ron, the interstate that we have goes from the border to Fairbanks, is Parks of Interstate, goes to Anchorage, and then it's the Glen from to the Tok Junction, and the Tok Junction to the Tok Junction.
Down.
From.
It goes basically from Soldotna to Anchorage on to Fairbanks and the Parks, on down to Tok, and the other Glen Highway up to Tok, if you will.
And Glen Highway from in other words,
Palmer
through Glen Allen, up the Tok cutoff, going on Solana, up to Tok. And so you actually have that. That's the area that people would transcend if they were coming or going to the States.
Yes.
Just good.
So it's about, like I said, it's 1,100 miles of that. And this other single sheet that we handed out here just tells you by region of the state how many miles of which category. As you'll notice on this, ferry routes are also categorized by the type of federal, basically the service that they provide based on the federal level.
Ron, why aren't ferry routes, some of them, why aren't they included in interstate?
I think that it probably, there's two items. As I mentioned, the interstate was a designated, negotiated, if you will, congressional decision that said, yeah, Alaska can have interstate, and it can have this interstate that's already existing construction, because they didn't want to get into any new construction of interstate. They're trying to say the interstate system is basically identified and we're finishing the last pieces of it. We can spend federal money on the ferry system. As to why it wasn't an attempt to put it into the interstate, I don't know. Mark, you may be back there.
I'm trying to remember. This happened in 82 that we obtained this. And at that time, the Congress was headed towards this. It's called the 4R program that Ron mentioned for reconstruction, rehabilitation of the interstate system.
Not that it's important, you know.
Well,
I'm
trying to remember it. We, in 78, we got a provision in the statute at that time providing for study. And in 82, over the objection of the Federal Highway Administration and the Federal Administration, Congress gave us 1,100 miles. I don't believe that the Marine Highway was looked at any time as being part of it. We do get a 0.5% minimum of all construction, interstate construction funds that are available. So that was one way that the state has participated in the interstate program. There's a minimum that stays in there. And I think the concern we had was, let's make sure we get in on the new funding source, and it's running about $26 million a year for us right now.
So. Yeah, if it makes a difference in revenue sharing on the federal side, whether it's interstate or primary, it's better to be interstate. We've got to fight for it in that way.
There was a study done at that time. We pulled that out and see if it was in there. I know we had recommended slightly higher than this, and we got about what we recommended there. I don't remember Marine Highways at any time being suggested for doing this. This was very controversial to do just this.
This I remember when this was done.
All right.
Go ahead,
Ron.
Okay. So basically, you can see that all of our interstate is paved. Just one item there. We're in the process of finishing what we're calling an interstate needs assessment, which basically looks at the interstate system that we have against the standards we've adopted, and then identifies estimated costs
of bringing the various deficient links up to standard, much like the aviation system plan. We're in the final drafts of that interstate needs assessment, and I think it probably comes up with a number like $1 billion is what it would cost to go out and magically bring all of that system up to the standard we've adopted.
Ron, is this the place, and Mark, is this the area where we get into this? Is there a percentage of that interstate that has, quote, safety? We talked about this last year about the shoulders on some of the narrow interstate that you have, particularly where you've got those large tour buses coming up the Alaska Highway, and we're down to just two ribbons. And we were going to talking about going in and doing shoulders instead of waiting for the upgrade. Go ahead.
If we had state money, we could go in and do the shoulders. Federal funds basically require that on a reconstruction that you bring that piece of road up to the standard you've agreed to. Now, they have a very small pot of money that's available for basically safety and hazard elimination, point specific, then you could do it. But if the road has basically got alignment problems and it's curving, it's got maybe a 12-foot surface excluding the shoulder, and you should have a 14 based on the standard, the federal funding would say, no, it's not a good economic decision to go in there and just put a little piece on the side. They want to have that section brought up to standard. Anyway, that report will be available probably within the next month. Basically, it identifies all the deficiencies basically in types of surface, alignment, horizontal and vertical. It identifies high hazard areas where there's been accidents. It then takes those and through a series of factors attempts to give points to the various segments of road and saying, and also looks at pavement, just condition of the pavement surface. So it then comes out with a proposed prioritization of projects. It also basically a documentation format is a series of like 10-mile section maps that identify the section, brief description of the type of road, the improvement that's required, whether there's bridge improvements required. So that
gets a check.
That goes on through there.
Ron, could we use this for school bus turnouts on secondary and state-maintained roads, or is this strictly interstate safety stuff?
The safety funds that exist can be used on any federal aid safety, federal aid system route, but they have an elaborate point system that you go through. Basically, you have a highway safety improvement plan you come out with annually that identifies basically areas that have had accidents, and it assigns a value to those, and they come out through this pretty mechanical task, deprioritized list of safety improvements for that year that fit into those safety dollars. Other federal money could be used for improvements along any of these federal aid routes. There again, you have basically that you couldn't just go in and straighten out a little section of a route. You have to make a commitment to eventually bring the route up to standard, or at least some reasonable from one junction to another, some reasonable segment of the route. Like I said, I didn't want to spend time.
The reason why I ask that question is because we've got an awful lot of these single two-lane, and school buses stop
on the highway.
What I'm saying is this safety and this hazardous thing, could we maybe send you guys a resolution or something saying that we're concerned about the school buses stopping on certain routes and that we should take a look at a study or a design of maybe putting out turnouts like you have as a scenic turnout or something, just another lane that sets off there for the time that where that bus is, or even commuter buses as far as that goes. Yeah.
We can build bus turnouts with our highway money.
With the highway money, you don't have to have safety.
It doesn't just have to be the safety. If you've been over along the Douglas Highway and noticed those basically shovel and a backhoe operating there, they're going to be building a bus turnout there because they have the same kind of problem there. The tour buses are stopping on there and blocking the main roadway.
In Ketchikan, it's two lane, and it's the same problem. I mean, you get traffic back up there 30, 40 cars at a time. Gets to be aggravating and lots of times dangerous because somebody can't see around and takes off and tries to pass the whole bunch. And first thing you know, you have a problem. So, good point, Jack.
Senator Foggill? Don't say so. Anyway, I didn't want to go through all these, but basically this...
This is good.
This paper describes the current...
Did I get one?
Current funding categories.
We're trying to get the noise level down as possibly can.
So basically, for all of the current funding formulas, this goes through and describes how they're apportioned. And in the back, there's a table that identifies how many dollars we get from each one. It shows the existing match ratio. And of course, as Mark mentioned, the Senate bill basically follows this type of a formula approach. And we, of course, hope and actually expect that that's the bill that will actually come out of Congress. So the particular rule or the dollar amount might change, but we would expect the new Federal Highway Act to be very similar to this.
Senator Farrakhan.
I hear the hope and would expect. Is our office in Washington working on this matter?
Yes.
Are we doing active lobbying?
Yes, through John Katz's office.
I'm sorry, I missed it, but I got to find out before I screw that again. Yep.
Through John Katz's office, they are directly involved with both the senators as well as the representatives. Okay, I just want to hand out a couple of other minor things, and these may actually be somewhat budget-related, but I think they'll add some perspective to more perspective, perhaps, to Mr. Hickey's presentation the other day. This identifies the mileages according to the categories that we used in our operating budget information. In other words, the idea of priority routes, other routes, federal routes.
Well,
and other routes. And this is just basically a synopsis of what I handed out there. And it's just another way of looking at our total mileage category. So in other words, when we were talking the other day about priority route miles, being those that we would continue to maintain in the various regions. In Southeast, in the priority category, there are 154 centerline miles. And this table just brings you on through that identification. Now, this ignores ferry routes, of course, because that wasn't part of that discussion. The other sheet of paper is some information we used in our review process for costing these type of routes. And it basically says of our 87 revised budget of $52 million in the highway and aviation area, which is down from $69.7 million that we spent in 86, so you can see there's a major reduction. It was divided up about $8.9 million in total went to airports. Priority routes got $26 million. Federal investment routes about $5.7 million. The other route category is about $4,600. Then fixed costs on highways, which would be like our fixed fees and our equipment and our camp costs, about $5.2 million, and airport fixed costs of about $1.2 million. And as you look, when you do get your summary report numbers and you start looking through and you'll be seeing, gee, it looks like there was a huge reduction perhaps in Southeast Alaska's funding. Down in the percentage area there, you'd see that Southeast Alaska has about 12.7% of their money in airports. Well, if you went on down to Western, you'd see that about a 60% of their highway and aviation budget is in airports. And the factoring that we looked at was mainly aimed at highways. So, of course, then you'd say, gee, there'd be a lot more in Southeast that was potentially impacted. And in fact, they only had 33% of their spending was for priority routes because they have a very low number. Whereas in Interior, 70% of their expenditure was on priority routes. Basically, they have the long runs between basically Prudhoe all the way to Valdez, the border all the way to where Central Region takes over, both on the parks and on the Glen Highway. So they have long expanses of the roads that got classified as priority routes. And I just thought that perhaps the combination of these two tables would allow you, as you got further into this, to have a general perspective of the of where the routes were impacted. In other words, when we said there was about 1,600 route miles, centerline miles, that were categorized as other, which budget were they mainly in? I realized we had some maps, and we will have detailed listings of each road, but this just gives you a quick snapshot. And I think that was as much as I was planning on covering today. I see it went a little faster than I expected. But we could go into any kind of detail, I think, that you wanted to.
I don't... This estimated highway and aviation costs FY87...
Right, that's what we're currently operating on.
Under Southeast Airports, $800,000.
That was their estimate. Basically, those would be costs of airports, Yakutat, Haines, Skagway, Wrangell, Petersburg.
That's M&O costs?
Yes.
All right. And then down here in percentage-wise, 12.7% is the... That's the total of the budget, percent of the total budget for Southeast.
Right.
For airports.
Right.
All right. The purpose of this map, I guess, is pretty well there. If you're familiar with our terminology, it's not a problem. But South Central, that we call South Central, is basically Valdez area.
That's pretty absorbed.
And many people, of course, in Southeast would think of South Central as being Anchorage. And so that's a nomenclature, I think, that is peculiar to DOT.
Is it part of the Central region now?
The distinctions that are drawn on there, Western, Interior, and South Central, are all part of the Northern Region. So the Northern Region basically goes all across the Northwest, around down by the Alaska border, all the way down through Valdez.
Oh, okay. So, Mr. Chairman, all right. So what? But you've done away with those two districts. Now they're. In nomenclature only, but there's no longer regional offices in those places. It's all now under the Northern Region in Fairbanks, right?
They report to people up there. In the budget, there is still a separate budget for Highways and Aviation, South Central Highways and Aviation, Western Highways and Aviation, Interior. Same with the administrative sides, same with the Working Capital Fund. And the reason for that is when we're going through budget preparation this year, the decisions were made by Governor Sheffield's office and continued on with Governor Cooper, that it would be less confusing to have everybody start out with a budget that pretty well matched the categories that were there last year. There's enough changes that have taken place through the fall reduction and another set of reductions, but the decision was, unless it's a mandatory change, just leave the basic budget structure that you've been using in place so that people have a historical reference point to be working from. And that's why the budget wasn't changed.
Hey, Chairman.
I we don't have time to get into it today. But the thing is, it would seem to me that when we get into this area, that we're going to be looking at, and the way I'm hearing around the legislative halls, is that we're going to figure out some way or other, through some nefarious scheme, to get maintenance money back into the maintenance section to do the sanding and that kind of stuff. And so where they're going to look at is a reorganization, again, taking a look at your organization, where the more of the administrative and functions and more of the direction will come from a central rather than from a regional organization. And I guess my question is, how much structure is left in those two skeletons? Is there a structure where that you've got a, not a deputy commissioner anymore, but not that level, but do you have somebody that's doing that function, but is it a different nomenclature or whatever you want to call it?
Basically, Valdez and Nome are being run much like Tazlina, as a major maintenance camp, if you will. Tazlina has got certain other maintenance stations to report to it. Valdez has certain other maintenance stations to report to it. It's on the same type of level in the maintenance organizational structure as, say, Tazlina or any of those others. And the same with...
So they're not going to be reporting to Valdez?
Well, the Valdez, the person in charge of maintenance for Valdez reports to John Horn's organization in Fairbanks.
And then, in turn, there's some stations report to Valdez.
Right.
But no longer does Paxson and Solana have to report to Valdez.
That I would have to actually look at John's organization chart. But there wasn't anybody elevated. Basically, when the maintenance director went away, it just kept dropping down to the next level of person who was already there. There was already a highway and aviation maintenance person in Valdez, and that's the person who is now in charge of that maintenance area.
Kind of pretty slim right now, in other words, what you're telling me.
Yes. And you have, at least this last summer, and I think we anticipate this summer, a presence in the design and construction side for running projects out of the Nome and Valdez office. There's some amount of design, very little going on in those offices right now. They've been pulled back into Fairbanks and eliminated, but actual running of projects and project management, that's a function still being done on a scaled-back basis out of those offices.
Well, there's going to be, Mr. Chairman, there's going to be some tremendous innovative scheme looked at, come around, and all of the rest of it from the standpoint of trying to figure out how we can get more maintenance money back down there in the maintenance shops. I don't know how the crystal, where we're going to get that from, but we can do it. You're going to feel kind of lonesome here, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to have to excuse myself. I've got a
good
teleconference.
Don't feel bad then when everything ends up in Southeast and Northern, all right?
That's the way I trust that you'll be fair in your dealings because I've got to go do a telephone call to Secretary of the Interior on our trip this week. And that's where we might have to get out of here.
All right. I can bring some highway funds back with you.
Yes. That's why I was asking that question. Maybe sure. I could find something.
No. All right.
That's it.
Okay.
From my end.
Ron, thank you.
Thank you.
Mark, do you have anything for us at all? Anything further to add?
Not today, Senator. We'll be ready with Marine Highways on Tuesday.
Okay. Nothing further. The
meeting's adjourned.